Hello and welcome to another episode of A Cast of Entrepreneurs. I'm Elaine Stroud, Chief Executive of the Entrepreneurs Forum, and with me today I have Sally Cowley. Hello, Sally.
Hi, Elaine. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm excited about this episode.
Me too.
So let's get on and meet our guests. Today we've invited three entrepreneurs, three very young entrepreneurs who at least started their business when they were very young. So we'll get on to introduce them. First up, I've got Ellen Headley, who is the co-founder of Vida Creative. Hello, Ellen.
Hi, Elaine. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too. And sitting next to Ellen, we have Hannah Brennan, who is one of the co-founders of Seer BI.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Hannah. And finally, last but not least, delighted to welcome you, Nick. We have Nick Gianfreda from Wriggle Marketing.
Morning. Thank you for having me. Ooh. I think I've just managed to catch the young entrepreneurs.
You are still very young, Nick. I'm counting young as anybody who was born in the 1980s. And I know you're towards the end of the 1980s.
Scraping it.
You're well within my definition of young. So we're going to start by saying you all started your business very young, but did you always want to be an entrepreneur? We'll start with Ellen.
I think I did, yeah. So I was 25 when I set up the limited company. We started hiring people when I was about 27. And I think I always thought I'd be a good manager. And I'm not sure that that necessarily in my young brain meant that I was going to be an entrepreneur. I didn't really know what it was to run your own business, but I definitely think I wanted to do something where I was like my own boss or I was leading other people. But what that was at the time, before I set up the business, I don't think I necessarily knew that, no.
Did you have people around you when you were younger that you could see who were running their own businesses, say family members or family friends?
I didn't. So both my parents were employed. Everyone, you know, just had, you know, the, I guess, normal jobs, whatever normal jobs are. But yeah, no one necessarily ran their own business. So I didn't have anyone that I was looking at going, oh, that would be great if I could, you know, do that for myself or, you know, anything like that.
And did you have a job before you set up?
Yes, I was working in universities. So I was a senior marketing officer at the University of Cumbria. It was my last job before I set up the company. So that was obviously totally different to running a small agency, but I'd worked with agencies. And I think the main thing that got me thinking about setting up the company was just because I felt like a very small cog in a very big wheel. And I kind of wanted to make a bit more of an impact. So yeah, that was the first thoughts of setting up on my own were, I did love my job, but I wanted to have a bit more of an impact, and that was kind of hard to do in my position at the uni, yeah.
And what made you make the leap, Ellen, from being paid every month to going into self-employment?
Yeah, well, I run the company with my now husband, and he's a website developer by trade. He was working at an agency as well, and his bosses said, we'll give you like guaranteed freelance work, essentially. So we did have a bit of savings, obviously, before we set up the company, but we had that to fall back on. If we didn't get enough work, we knew that we had that bit of extra work to fall back on. But we wanted to go traveling, Henry and I, and for a long period of time, so we knew that we couldn't do that in employment. So there was a combination of that and wanted to do something a bit more creative where we had more autonomy. So yeah, that was the kind of driver for setting up the business.
Brilliant. And what about for you, Nick? What was the driver for your setting up Wriggle Marketing?
I think I kind of fell into it, to be perfectly honest, fell into marketing. So I was actually at a business awards dinner and the person sat next to me asked me what I did, and I didn't actually have a job at the time. And I said I did PPC, and I did do that, but I did that for my mum. And they said, oh, could you do it for us? And I said, yeah, of course. That's no problem whatsoever. And she said, have you got a card? I said, no, have you? And it was the head of recruitment for Newcastle University Business School opposite St James's Park. And I ended up pitching the week after and getting the job the week after that, getting the client the week after that, which provided a good foundation to then go get kind of other clients. But I think the main driver, I always wanted to be kind of self-employed or run my own business because I'd seen other family members do it. But the main driver, naturally, you know, a lot of it is financial, but also a lot of it was time, to be able to have that time as you kind of to have freedom. You said, mentioned about going traveling there.
So
I think the main driver is really kind of, you know, freedom and the financial aspect too.
And you mentioned that you had people around you who'd been entrepreneurs, so you had role models when you were younger.
So both my grandfathers owned their own business as well, and then their children, all of them pretty much owned their own businesses too. So very much grew up within kind of an entrepreneurial environment.
And how do you think having all of those entrepreneurs in your family around you, how did that influence you?
In a really positive way, because I'm like an open book, and I think some of the family are as well. You know, the more you talk, the more actually you solve the problems kind of together. And I'm like that with the team as well. You know, if you talk to people about what's going on, not just problems, but positive things, the more information that you then get back, and you should be almost like a sponge.
So were you one of these kids that was selling things in the playground at school? I think you were.
Yeah,
I can see that in your eyes already. Tell us more.
Selling things in the playground, washing cars from when I was like 12 years old, started a couple of businesses, one with a friend up here when I was 18 years old. Yeah, there was lots of different things that kind of happened.
Did you ever have a paid employment?
Not for very long. Yeah, it didn't last very long. I kind of... I'm not
a very good employee.
I'm not a very good employee, no.
That seems to be quite a common thread with the entrepreneurs that we've had around the table for our podcasts.
And Hannah, for you, I'm right in thinking you set up the business when you were still in university.
Yeah,
so tell us
right.
about the origins of your business, how you got involved and what led you to starting it.
Yeah, so I was still in the middle of a 2 years master's degree that I was doing remotely, and my now husband was doing a 1 year master's based out of Teesside Uni in computing, and he kind of was working on the side for a company called the High Tide Charity that aims at getting young people in Middlesbrough and the Tees Valley into kind of give them an understanding of what jobs are available in the area and specifically in the maritime sector. So he got to know lots of these maritime businesses and realised that there was this huge gap in their technology and what they actually do. So he was doing a little bit of freelance work and kind of realised this could be something. And at the same time, I was obviously doing my master's, studying a lot about international development and artificial intelligence applications and how we can use that to develop globally. And we kind of had a chat and thought, like, yeah, this could really be something. So it was really odd to be, we were based out of the university and their kind of entrepreneurs startup hub had staff while we were still students ourselves that were getting paid from the university through one of their schemes while we were still completely just funding ourselves through our student loans.
And so when you were at university, A, what was your master's in?
So my master's was in international development, and it's from the School of Oriental and African Studies down in London.
Okay, so you weren't actually a student at Teesside University.
No, no.
So you were studying remotely from Teesside,
yeah.
And then you're working on the side, mm-hmm. building this business. At what point did you realise this is going to be our full-time commitment?
I think we had lots of conversations throughout. We had lots of really good mentors that made sure to ask me the question of, like, what do I want? Am I just in this as, like, kind of a stopgap to help things get off the ground? And I started getting more opportunities through the network that we had where I was really learning how to apply what I'd done in my master's degree and what I was studying to the job. And I think the more that happened, the more I realised that I could shape the work that I was doing, the clients that we were getting, into something that really interested me.
Yeah, interesting. So you set up with, quite common, isn't it? You set up with now your husband, so you've
yep.
got co-founders, same as you, Ellen.
Yeah.
Nick, have you done it all alone, or have you got co-founders in your business?
Yeah, so initially just myself, and we've now got a managing director in the business who, for all intents and purposes, is who I class my business partner. And I think we've gone through a lot of the kind of struggles together. I haven't worked with my wife. I don't think that would work very well, if I'm perfectly honest. So hats off to you both who do it.
Do you two who do work with your husbands, do you find it easier having a co-founder in the business than if you had done it alone?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people say, like, we introduce ourselves at events. It's like, this is Owen. And we kind of at the start didn't introduce ourselves as being, like, together in a relationship as much. And obviously now we do a lot more that we're married and it's different. But people say all the time, like, oh, I couldn't work with my wife. Like, how do you do it? And actually, in some ways, it's the best thing that you could possibly do, because I imagine if I was going home and trying to explain the struggles to a husband who wasn't involved in the business, they just wouldn't understand at all. Whereas because we're in it together, we know all of the struggles completely.
And do you have any sort of cutoff where you get home and you say, right, that's it, we're not talking about work, because otherwise it can consume you?
Yeah, we do try. But when I think anyone who runs a startup knows that, like, when you run a startup, that is your life. So we do still have, like, plenty of hobbies ourselves and spend time with other people and things like that. But as far as having to, like, right, okay, it's 6 o'clock, we're not going to talk about it,
I think when you're running a startup, you're still going to get emails at 8 o'clock that need to be responded to and things like that. So it's a bit different.
And yeah, how about for you, Ellen?
The same. Yeah, I would say exactly the same for me. One, I enjoy working with Henry, but also what you said about, you know, you totally get how it is running a business together. So I think that's it's kind of like an unspoken thing, isn't it? When you're going through stuff, you know how the other person feels. And then, like I say, we try to not talk about work sometimes. And there are days, you know, when one or the other of us goes, you know, I can't talk about this right now. But if I have an issue that I really feel like I do want to discuss with Henry, then we are very understanding of each other. And, you know, you help each other work through your problems, don't you? So I think we do definitely try not to talk about work too much at home. But it's inevitable. Like you say, it is your life and it's all consuming. So you're going to talk about it quite a lot.
And I guess it's nice to have that support around you.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And have you got any mentors outside of the business? Hannah, you've mentioned that you've, as you set up, you had mentors kind of guiding you. Who were the mentors and how did you find them?
Yeah, so some of them have came through the network that Owen already had established. So we've got some really good mentors through Michael Shakeshare from Casper Shipping, Dominic Lusardi, who was the founder or co-founder of Animersion, who's now our chief information officer. We've had some really good support from the likes of Digital City. I did their program when we were starting up the business. Obviously now we've done Ignite, that was fantastic. Having a network of mentors who are all from different kind of sectors and different experiences to be able to phone up and say, like, I've got this problem, I don't know how to deal with it, because we're still quite young and unexperienced. You need to have those people around you that you can rely on and voice those concerns to.
And for you, Ellen, have you had mentors?
Yeah, pretty much from the start. So when we first finished travelling, we moved to Newcastle. We went on the NatWest Accelerator Programme. I think that was in 2018, 2019. And you get a coach there. So that was great. And they basically taught us all the logistics of running a business. But since then, yeah, we've had various coaches. I've got a mentor through the forum at the moment. She's amazing. Kirsty, I'm meeting up with her in a few days, actually. So that's great. And then currently on the Scale Up Academy programme through the forum as well, which is brilliant because you can meet, you know, other members who are going through the same sort of process. But yeah, we've always had mentors and coaches, and definitely find that really, really important.
And Nick, you've got your business partner now. Did he, she come in after you'd set up the business?
Yeah, so a few years, like 3-4 years. And then Mitchell started as a kind of SEO exec. And then over the last, well, they've been MD now for 2 years. But in respect of kind of mentors, yes, had some very, very good mentors and around me at all times. And now I think it's more kind of, we use consultants as well to help us grow. So for example, we use Sphera Consultants, Roscoe Lightly. And I think they put things in place for us that we just needed when we were a bit younger as a business, the confidence to be able to put in place. So we knew we needed to do these things, but actually we were quite hesitant about it. And actually they just give you that little push that you need, that little bit of confidence to be able to implement it. And then you look back over kind of 3 months after you've implemented, you're like, why didn't we just do that? And that's where I think kind of the real value comes in. And they also hold you to account as well. You know, if you put your kind of 1 year, 3 and 5 year plan laid out, which we do, and you make your quarterly plans based around those plans. And then if you're not hitting your quarterly targets, it's kind of like they hold you to account, because really, as the business owner, you've got to hold yourself to account. And it's really at some point easy to kind of, in some cases, make excuses. But whereas if you've got these people around you who actually are holding you to account and asking you, why didn't you achieve that? Why didn't you do that? That's where I think there's a huge amount of value as well.
And I think sometimes it's having those people, but also because you know those people are going to ask that questions, it forces you to kind of get on with it a bit quicker, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Do you have those people who will like chase you up on your quarterly targets or monthly targets, Ellen?
Yeah, so Henry and I also have Chris, our design director in the business now, and we're all really good at holding each other to account. So we've kind of got different areas of the business that we focus on. But yeah, externally, through the Scale Up Academy, that's really good, because between every session, you have to set actions. And when you turn up to the next one, Ian's going, right, have you done this? Have you done that? So I think that's actually really, really helped us more recently. But yeah, we've previously had a coach helping us with that, where we'd set out our quarterly actions and things like that. And they, again, would hold us to account. And that's super valuable. And like you say, Elaine, it's if you know someone's going to ask you about it, you're going to do it. So, yeah.
Yeah. So if anyone's listening, if you're an entrepreneur, a budding entrepreneur or a member, then seek out those external people who will put that sort of like slight It's a bit of pressure, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a little bit of pressure, but in a really good way.
Definitely.
That makes you actually not let those deadlines slip, and it keeps you, you know, moving forward, which is what you want to do.
So you all started your businesses when you were very, very young. Do you think that's given you an advantage in building your businesses?
I think for me it has, definitely, in terms of, I don't know if we'd have both gone into a longer term career, we'd have taken the risk. We were very fortunate, obviously, to have the kind of savings that we had behind us from Owen working full time and a student loan. That meant that we didn't have a lot of expensive outgoings. Had we maybe gone into the likes of the career that Owen was looking at, in working for somebody like Google or Amazon as a developer, and my ambitions were always to go and work away for like the British Embassy or the UN, it would have been very difficult for us to then start a business, I think. But I think the way that we've done it means that we've achieved more than we probably would have if we'd have just gone straight into that from graduating.
So you almost didn't have the ties to break away from.
Yeah.
You could start straight away without risking anything, really.
I think, you know, you admire anyone that starts their own business anyway, but actually, arguably, the later you start, the harder it actually is, because you might be used to that income that's coming, and you might be used to kind of the stability. And therefore, if you do it kind of without almost knowing that, without having that previously, it kind of makes it a bit easier. I think also you almost get a head start, right? In my mind, there's no such thing as like a quick buck, you know. And if the earlier you start, the more longevity that hopefully the business has got, and the more it can continue. So when someone might start at 35, and, you know, if you look at what that business might look like in 10 years, you know, if you start at 25, your business is going to be kind of 20 years old in comparison to the 10-year-old. But then arguably, at 25, you've got no experience, whereas at 35, you've got a whole host of experience. So I think there's pros and cons to it.
And I guess on the flip side, you know, you've all got clients. Do you think they treat you differently because you're younger and maybe they perceive that you've got less experience? Do you think you have to work harder almost because you haven't got the years of track record that other people have?
I would probably agree sometimes, but to be honest, we're very much about working with people that maybe don't have those sort of views, so are open to working with younger people. I would definitely say when we first started, we probably found it harder, but mainly probably because of our own confidence rather than external factors. But yeah, I think you do just have to work a little bit harder and put yourself across as a bit more confident than you might naturally be if you are younger. But I'm used to that now, so I can't really remember what that was like. But yeah, at the start, I did used to feel like it was quite a big thing.
I would agree with that, Anna. But I would also say that from our perspective, from Wriggle's perspective, a lot of our client base kind of are entrepreneurs themselves, because we're going in and meeting kind of the decision makers within the business. And as a result of that, they almost admire that there's a young person or was a young person starting the business, and therefore they were willing to give you a bit of a chance. They were willing to take a risk of, right, well, we've got this company in. And, you know, they might be the same price, it might be a bit more expensive, it might be a bit cheaper, I don't know. But actually, we like this individual because of what they're doing and kind of what's going on around them. So I think that's something to take into consideration too.
I guess you've got the advantage as well of kind of being in touch maybe with the client base that they've got. So you know what's, you know, all the trends, and keeping up, I guess, with clients is maybe easier.
Yeah, I don't know. I think for us, we're exactly the same. It's about working with people. It doesn't really matter how old or young you are. Like, we're about working with people who are excited about what we're doing and, you know, excited about, you know, working together. So I think try and avoid sort of thinking about age in that context, don't you? But yeah.
If you're enjoying the conversations on this podcast, then get involved. The Entrepreneurs Forum is a membership organisation for entrepreneurs based in the northeast of England. You can find out all the details by going to our website, entrepreneursforum.net.
What do you wish you'd known when you first started out, even though it's not that long for some of you?
How to charge more. I think when we first started the business, and I think every business is probably the same, you look back now and think, oh, could have made a little bit more money out of that. But obviously you do that to kind of win the work at that point, and then you start to build a reputation. So yeah, I think we should know a bit more about that, and then maybe a bit more kind of, I don't know, about the impact of kind of, you know, if clients drop off, like kind of sustainability of the business, I think is probably the main thing, you know, forecasting for not just a month, forecasting for a year, forecasting and planning for 2 years. We should have done more of that.
Yeah. Were there times where you didn't necessarily get that right?
Didn't do it. Like, and when we found it was just me and first started, there was no kind of plan because it all kind of happened. And actually what I should have done is sat down after like 6 months and said, right, this is what I want to achieve after kind of like a year, 2 years. And actually now we do that, but it kind of took, I'd say, a year to 24 months before we actually did that.
Yeah, and I think that's quite common, isn't it? You start by winning the work.
Yeah.
And then there's a point where you think, actually, I do need to be a business here. I need to have accounts.
Yes.
And management accounts and all that boring stuff that actually is really necessary. And that's what will help accelerate
yeah.
you. So did you say you were about 12 months in before you thought, actually, we need to professionalise this
yeah.
a little bit more?
Probably more towards 2 years, if I'm honest, because it was all about kind of winning the work, servicing the work. And obviously, at that point, it was really just me. So winning the work, servicing the work, and making sure that those clients were getting results. And then, obviously, after kind of 12 to 24 months, you start to look at, like you say, making it a bit more professional.
Yes, yeah. Do you girls, do you think the same? Or did you start off, I feel like you're quite organised, Ellen. I think you probably started off quite well in terms of getting all of that sort of business side of it
well,
done.
I think the NatWest Accelerator programme was amazing at the stage we were at, because they literally go from absolute basics of running a business, because we, mind you, I lie, Henry had run his own business before while we were still at university, and he was running it with his friend, and then they decided to, you know, part ways after graduation, but they were just building websites for the colleges around the university. So he had a bit of experience, but nothing like, you know, setting up a business in terms of hiring other people and all of that stuff. So that was great. But I think, as opposed to like maybe one specific thing that I wish I'd known, there's not really one, because there was so much that I didn't know, but probably the fact that everyone is just making it up as they go along. Like, no matter how old you are, it's like you start a business, everyone's like, oh my God, you know, what am I doing? Can I do it? But everyone's the same. So I think that's been really, really nice. And especially now, like you guys at Wriggle, like we work with the decision makers, the business owners, so you do get to have those conversations, and everyone's just making it up as they go along. They're just looking at the next stage of their business and how they can make it a success. So I think that's probably what I would say to any young entrepreneur: just start, because there's never a right time and no one knows exactly what they're doing ever, so it's fine.
Sometimes you just have to get on with it, don't
yeah.
you? And actually, a lot of people, there's so many people have ideas for businesses and they never come to anything.
Yeah.
And actually what you've done is say, well, let's just make it happen, but we have to do.
Yeah. And it was hard and scary at the time, but I'm glad we did it. Yeah.
Hannah, tell us about the Ignite programme and how that helped your business.
Yeah, so that was fantastic. So we were on the Ignite Accelerator last year. So we were the 2023 cohort. It came at a time when we'd been talking about our product Flitter for a little while. So Flitter is a customs automation platform which can automate your customs declarations for CDS. And we were thinking about this. We developed it primarily for a client and then decided that we were going to take it with the client to market. Being on the Ignite program pushed us so much to actually get that developed, even just as a basic MVP that we could actually sell. Like Ellen was saying, the kind of NatWest program where you've got somebody who's holding you accountable. Every week I had to tell them how many potential clients I'd contacted. If it hadn't, I had to have a reason why. And having them constant check-ins, and also the entrepreneurs and residents that they had that we were able to discuss with and kind of help push us forward. And then we went to San Francisco at the end of the trip, which was a really formative time. So it happened right as OpenAI's Dev Day was happening in SF. My husband Owen stayed out there for an extra week and ended up having a party with Grimes and Elon Musk. Like, it's just stuff that you could never, when we set up the business, you never picture this happening. And the way that it accelerated us in getting the product to market was just incredible, and really did learn a lot. In obviously we were running a service-based agency, so running a product and getting that to market is completely different. So it was really needed in giving us that push.
Yeah, I'm intrigued with his San Francisco trip. So
yeah.
I'm feeling like you missed out if he got to go to the parties with Grimes and Elon Musk and you came home to do the work. What did you actually do when you were in San Francisco?
So the week that we did with the Ignite program was lots of meetings that they had set up. So there was some with different investors, some with accelerators like Plug and Play based out in Sunnyvale. It's where like Google and Amazon and the big ones are. meetings with different people who'd set up businesses in the UK and then moved out there. And then we also had like all of the time on an evening that we could do with what we wanted. So me and Owen went to a few like hackathons with Twilio and lots of other different businesses that are based out there. I won a Nintendo Switch, so it was still fun for me. I a Halloween costume party where I dressed up as Python, the programming language. And then, yeah, so we'd kind of learned on some of the other international trips that me and Owen had been on that it's really beneficial to have a week afterwards where you're not part of the kind of planned programme and you can just book your own meetings to follow up on and do with what you want. And that's when OpenAI's Dev Day occurred. We didn't get tickets because we didn't think we were going to be out there at the time. So Owen went to a watch party at Cloudflare and then, yeah, ended up getting invited back to a rave with Grimes.
Sounds extraordinary. Yeah,
but the kind of thing that you just don't get over here, it's a completely different culture. There were like QR codes to scan up for AWS credits. Yeah, completely different.
So has that experience kind of opened you up to moving into different markets as well?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of us working a lot in customs, the US market's really difficult to penetrate because obviously they've got so many states. Each of the individual states have their own customs regulations, so we'd have to technically have a customs expert in each state to be able to do that. I don't think we'd have known that if we hadn't gone out there. In terms of the maritime market as a whole, being based near a port there was really interesting and helped us to understand, I think, how things work out there. I feel like a lot of people who work in tech have this kind of, or entrepreneurs in tech have this idea of like, we'll move to Silicon Valley, everything will be great, we can raise a million like tomorrow. And you probably could, but it's probably not what you want to do and it's not sustainable. So it was good for us to know what was next in that way.
Yeah, and I think a really good opportunity to go and see a different market. Mm-hmm. Experience, I mean, you're quite young when you're setting it up. You haven't seen all of these different countries and different ways of doing things, so you're kind of just soaking up all those different experiences and then reflecting and saying what's right for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For Nick and for Ellen, have you been out of the region to have a look and see what trends and what's going on elsewhere, and are you able to take any of that back to you?
Well, we know a few other people who run agencies in other parts of the country. I know a couple of people that work in London. We set up the business when we were still living in Lancaster and working there. So we've got a few friends there who run agencies. And it is amazing even how different it is in London to how it is here. The way people are, the way, you know, the speed at which they expect things to happen. And yeah, the trends and everything like that is really interesting. So we do definitely keep an eye out because we do, you know, we're open to working with clients down there. But yeah, I think it's super important to keep your eyes open to what's happening elsewhere.
What is different then between running an agency in London and here?
I think the main thing is probably more cultural than anything. So the work is the same, in my opinion. It might not be this, but I think the work output is the same, but it's just the sort of the way you work and the working relationships. I don't know. I think speaking to my friends who work in agencies in London, it's, you know, long hours, you're expected to work evenings and weekends if you have to, and all of that stuff. I think it's just a different culture rather than
much more
the work.
Much more fast-paced.
Definitely fast-paced, yeah.
Down south. I also think you've got a lot more loyalty up here than you do down there. Your clients will actually have a conversation with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, speak to you, and you can actually develop a relationship, whereas I kind of feel in London, you don't get the opportunity to do that because the people that you're dealing with might move on quite quickly, might go to other roles, et cetera, et cetera. We take on clients all over the kind of UK, but I would say our sweet spot is kind of Yorkshire all the way up to kind of Edinburgh, Glasgow way. That's kind of where we target as a business at this point in time. And that's not because we don't want to take on companies in London. I think also it depends what sector and industry you target. So for us, we target engineering and manufacturing. It's very difficult to get into those, the right people, and also the conversion rate time that it takes to kind of from your initial meeting to kind of converting a client in that sector is really long. In some cases it can be kind of like 12 months plus, but we made that decision as a business. Whereas I think kind of some of the maybe sectors you were alluding to there where it's quite fast pace are probably, you know, not within that sector in other sectors.
So you're obviously, all three of you are working massively hard to make a success of your businesses. How do you kind of step away from your business and get some time away from it? What do you do away from the business to recharge?
So I've completely since we started the business. I also run a charity. We're called the Crafty Afty, and we do therapeutic art sessions for people living with and affected by cancer. So I've run that since before we started the business. So that's my Saturday afternoon. So that's kind of a really nice break. It's still stressful in itself. We've got like funding to consider and things like that, but still being able to do something hands-on. That I did fine art in my undergraduate degree, so still being able to do something practical like that's really nice. Owen likes to hike on a Saturday afternoon when I'm doing that, so we both then have our time away from each other, which is nice.
Oh, congratulations on charitable side of things. That's really, really amazing. I'm feeling like the others are now going, what am I going to say that feels quite so worthy?
I was going to say, exercise, despite the shape of me, I do quite a lot of exercise. But yeah, like nothing to compare to that. That's amazing.
I also think exercise is so important. I've joined the gym across the road from the office, so that I have no excuse not to. But yeah, like I didn't get to go yesterday, so I ran home from the office because I just think it clears my mind and it's something that I can do on my own. I don't have to talk to anyone else. I can put a podcast on in my headphones. And then yeah, I'm a really creative person, so I like doing crafty things in my spare time. And Henry and I, we've got a camper van, so we don't get away as much as we'd like in it, but we've had a few trips away recently which have been really nice. So yeah, traveling and getting out of Newcastle and seeing new people and family and stuff like that.
Do you like team sports or is it individual sports?
Individual
yeah
sports.
That's the same as me.
Yeah,
my wife's like always like, why don't you do a team sport? It's like, I don't want to talk to anyone.
I think there's a lot of commitment as there well is. Behind doing a team sport. So I've just started adult ballet classes.
Wow, love
which
that.
Which is like completely different, but yeah, I've always been involved in sports since I was young, kind of did karate and then netball, and I was a cheerleader at university and then was kind of like, I need to do something as an adult.
Yeah.
I just like to plug my headphones in and either run, cycle, or, you know, do something.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to interact with other people when I'm exercising.
Yeah. Henry and I both did the Great North Run a few years ago, and we used to go on a couple of training runs with each other, but it was very much most of the time going out on our own, or if we did go out with each other, we'd have something different in our headphones. It wasn't a chatty time, it was like a just get, you know, zone out and relax.
Be interesting to ask other people that when you have them, whether they do individual team stuff.
Yeah, I think most of the entrepreneurs we know, most people do individual sports. And what
that's
I'm hearing
really
is actually you want the headspace.
Yeah.
So you want a bit of headspace for yourself because life is busy enough running your business. So taking your time out, lots of people listen to podcasts when they run, or a lot of people just don't listen to anything. They just use that time to have that headspace. And whether that's going for a walk, a cycle, or a run, or whatever you do, it's creating that space where you've got time to think. Because I don't think you get your best ideas sitting in front of a computer.
Yeah.
You get your best ideas often on these runs, and then you take it back and try and remember what you remembered, which was a really good idea 20 minutes ago. But anything that creates headspace, I think, is good.
So what's on your playlist when you're running, exercising?
Very much depends on my mood. I'll sometimes listen to... I love house music, so I sometimes listen to house music, or I sometimes listen and I love sort of like hip hop and chill, like rap music. So depends on my mood. If I'm up for like a slow chill run, I'll listen to that. But if I want to maybe get a PB, I'll put some fast music on and turn it up loud.
For those who listen to this that know my music taste, they know why I'm going to avoid this question. I'm not going to answer that.
You're quite as bad as me trying to learn how to run. So I was like, January, my New Year's resolution, I'm going to be able to run a 5K before the end of the year. And as somebody who doesn't run, that's a big thing. And I was like, right, do I do like a couch to 5K? No, there's a Taylor Swift couch to 5K running. And each time the like chorus comes on, that's when you run. And then the rest of it, you walk. And then you eventually build up. And there's different, like, her eras are different, like, okay, that's your 10-minute run, or that's your 20-minute run of the week.
Love it.
So maybe that's what it is.
Oh, I love that. Mm. And any podcast recommendations that you might put in while you're out and about?
Oh, I listened to a few. Red Handed is a really good true crime podcast, if anyone likes a bit of true crime. And The Diary of a CEO, Stephen Bartlett's one. And also Chris and Rosie Ramsey, they do a funny comedy one called Shagged, Married, Annoyed, which is really funny. So they're my top three, I think.
Stephen Bartlett, Diary of a CEO is very good. Entrepreneurs Forum's quite cool as well, I hear.
Yeah, a cast of entrepreneurs. Keep listening, subscribe.
Nice plug, thanks, Nick.
Hannah, are you a podcast girl?
I am. I listen to, like, yourself, Ellen, like, true crime. Sometimes I'll end up just listening to whatever like Owen's kind of left on it. I'll let it go through shuffle. A lot of like tech related ones that names now escape me.
I know sometimes you just have them in your favourites and you don't actually know what they're called. You just know press play on that episode.
So in terms of downtime, one of our questions is, if you had a year away from your business, what would you do? So not just popping out for a run. If you had the opportunity to go away, what would you do? Ellen, you mentioned, do you like travelling at the beginning? Is that something that you still want to do?
Absolutely, yeah. That would 100% be what I would do. I would go and find when the weather is best in all different countries and go. Henry and I went to Costa Rica, it's probably about 7 years ago now, but it was just the most amazing place. And we only spent 2 weeks there, but I would love to spend more time there. And I've never travelled anywhere in Southeast Asia, and I'd love to go there. And Australia and New Zealand as well, I've never been there either. So, yeah, round the world trip for me.
Sounds good, yeah.
So I'm actually about to do this, which is something that you guys don't know.
This is exciting.
So I'm going to be dropping down my hours at the business and taking on a role as a senior researcher at Teesside University. So I'm going to be working within their Net Zero Industry Innovation Centre, looking at artificial intelligence applications in Net Zero, which is really exciting because it's kind of a little bit more hands-on in what my master's degree was and slightly more aligning with where I could see things going in the future. But kind of aside from that, we've always spoke about, right, I'd love to do like 6 months, even still running the business, but remote. So like, okay, I want to do it in like the Scottish Hebrides or on one of the like British Isles would be really interesting.
That sounds great.
I think 2 points to this. I think if I was forced to not work within Wriggle, I'd probably end up starting another business because I just don't like sitting still. I actually love work. I love getting up in the morning. You know, we all have those days, right, where it's like, oh God, here we go. But for the lion's share of it, the vast majority of it, you love getting up and doing what you're doing, which is why you do it. But if I was forced to do it, I'd probably end up going away and then trying to start something else. You know, your mind constantly ticks, I think.
Yeah, it's always having that outside inspiration. You can't stop, can you?
I think if you get given the opportunity to have that year, you probably will find, you know, other opportunities. Mm-hmm. When you, like you were saying about headspace, when you get that opportunity for a year to step back, it's not a run, is it? It's like a year. And then all of a sudden, all other stuff would open up. So, yeah.
And thinking about who you admire and who inspires you, which entrepreneurs are you inspired by?
Someone I follow on LinkedIn, Sarah Davies, you know, I think I love how positive she is and I love how honest she is in her posts and the things she talks about. And yeah, I look at her and I think she's a really good role model. Stephen Bartlett, I have been a bit of a fangirl of him since when I worked at Lancaster University in my first job. I went to a conference and he was there talking about, he was running, I can't remember what this social media company that he ran when he first started out. And he is, I think he's about my age. He's either 1 year younger or older. And he was on the main stage at this conference that I was at and I was in my first job. And I was like, oh my God, this guy, like he's got it together. And he's like 23 or however old I was at the time. So ever since then, I've just kind of like followed him. And I just think his determination, he's got, I maybe preferred him before, but he's someone that I still very much look to and like listen to a podcast, like I say, about all the different things that come with entrepreneurship. So yeah, I think he's another one on the list.
Yeah, he's great. And Sarah is as well. And she was on this podcast in series 1. And it's a good episode to listen to if you want to go back, anyone listening. I think it was about the 4th episode in series 1. But she talks a lot about how she built the culture at Crafters Companion. And she also talks about how nervous she was in going into the den and how that was out of her comfort zone. And now you look at her and you think that must, it's just what she does. So definitely go back and tune into that one. How about you, Hannah?
One that I definitely follow on LinkedIn and somebody who I listen to a podcast of as well. She's a woman called Michelle Politzian. She's based out of California in the US and she runs kind of a business coaching business. And her business is kind of all focused on running businesses holistically. I feel like I've just said business so many times, but how we can run it to be most in tune with ourselves rather than trying to kind of fight against that and always fit in towards kind of like what the corporate norms of running a business was. And the way that she's done it is really interesting, and also the way that she interacts with the local environment is really interesting and like the local culture of entrepreneurs. So she's ran kind of these retreat in like kind of Los Angeles for people to go and do like deep work. So a 2-day based out of a co-working space and really go in there and you can do whatever you want, but having a support network around you, other businesses. And if you want help with accounting, there'll be somebody who can help you with accounting, or a web developer. And that kind of really holistic way of running a business is interesting to me.
Yeah, she sounds like a good person to follow. I'll look her up. And how about you, Nick?
I recently read a book, Jim Ratcliffe, The Alchemist, and the journey that they went on at INEOS actually really inspired me. It's nothing to do with kind of it's not the same sector or industry that wriggles in, but that book and what they dealt with, obviously, I imagine it's glamorized a little bit in the book. But yeah, what they did there, I think, was seriously impressive. And yeah, I kind of will read that book again, hopefully in the summer.
And quite often you get inspiration from unlikely places, don't you? That
yeah.
It's, you know, totally different industries doing things in a different way, but that can still inspire you.
Yeah.
So
that I think book, sport I think... is quite like it. I don't know if you guys get this, but like looking at sports teams, because it's so obvious how they have to work together and do things and mindset and all of that stuff. Every time anyone sort of compares anything in entrepreneurship to sports, I'm like, I get it. I understand why that's important, because it's so easy to look at.
Have you seen the Netflix series on the F1?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, that's a prime example of real high performing individuals.
Exactly.
The same with the Six Nations as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Netflix is doing their rounds on sports. I think there's one on athletics coming out soon, and I've seen the tennis one. But sport, I mean, in some ways, it's quite easy in sport, isn't it? Because the goal is absolutely clear. It's easier to define it.
Yeah.
But you then have to define what's your goal in your business to have that same sort of motivation.
Yeah, definitely.
And we ask our guests as well, is if they could be on the fly on the wall in anyone's boardroom, who would they go in? And the most common answer... no surprises, would be go and see what Elon Musk is really like behind the scenes. We'd like to see him have one of his flare-ups. So you can say that, or you can have another answer.
I would say like Musk or Sam Altman's, especially at the moment. Uh-huh. Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, so he's behind OpenAI, isn't he? And he's left the boardroom and then gone back.
Yeah, then there's just been a whole thing between them of either Sam or OpenAI released all of Musk's emails for while they were working there, and there's like a whole lawsuit and things at the moment. So
yes, definitely going into that boardroom would be quite definitely. You want to be a fly on the wall and not noticeable, though, don't you?
Yeah.
How about you, Nick?
I was going to say Elon Musk, but I can't do that now. It feels like too much of a cop out. So maybe Warren Buffett. And kind of Berkshire Hathaway, that boardroom. So I imagine, like, I actually find when you see, when you're scrolling through Instagram and you see his kind of things come up, actually quite a soothing and calming chap, which is probably the complete opposite to Elon Musk, I imagine.
I have absolutely no idea. That's a really tough question. Maybe, I don't know, some large, because I run an agency, I would probably like to go and see how it is in like a large agency that I admire. I can't think of any names right now, but yeah, something like that, to see how they run their boardroom. Yeah,
someone a little bit further along the journey.
Exactly.
Than you are,
yeah.
What can you take from them? That's a very good answer.
Equally, the woman who ran Theranos, the blood sampling company out of Silicon Valley that ended up going under. If you haven't seen, I think it's called Dropout. It's a fantastic series.
I think she's been prosecuted now.
She has,
hasn't she?
But I would be really interested to kind of actually understand how much maybe she was responsible and how much she kind of was just
making it up.
How much she was making it up, or how much she just like slipped down the rabbit hole a little bit.
No, that would be interesting. When we say you've got to, everybody's making it up. She
really
was,
making
it up. So we'll leave it at that point. And we're coming towards the end of the podcast. We've got a couple of wrap-up questions, which we would love to go through with you. The first one is, there's lots of people who listen to this podcast who are, again, young, new entrepreneurs. What is the one piece of advice you'd say to someone who's coming out of university or in their 20s thinking, maybe I should just take this idea and run with it?
Just do it.
Just do it.
Just do it. Attend every meeting, attend every event, talk to as many people as possible. Because whilst it seems really daunting at the time, everybody actually wants to help and see you on your way in a real positive, positive way. Yeah, that would attend every meeting and speak to as many people as possible.
I think the same kind of attend every meeting, go to as many networking events, like the events that are put on by the Entrepreneurs Forum, that many different business networks that are in the local area are really helpful.
Yeah, and I think if you know what type of business you want to set up, just ask people that are currently running those types of businesses if you can have a coffee with them and pick their brains, because like Nick said, everyone's happy to help. So I think that's probably, yeah, what I would say, set up meetings with people that you admire in the business community.
So don't be shy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's lots of help.
Ask for help. Yeah.
Definitely. And you've all got many years ahead of you of running your businesses. What do you want to achieve in that time? And what will the headline be in 20, 30, 40 years' time?
I think for me, it was interesting what you were saying, Hannah, about running the business in alignment with, you know, how, your values and how you are. I think it is probably just, we've got a really great culture at VIDA. And I think whatever we do in the future, I just want that to be maintained. And I want people to enjoy coming to work, enjoy what they do. And yeah, you know, hope that we work with bigger and, you know, national, international clients in the future and have a larger team. But I think as long as we can keep the culture of enjoying what we do and, you know, being happy to come to work every day is my main thing that I really want to keep in the business.
Yeah, and that's important if you're going in every day and you've got lots of years ahead of you.
Yeah.
You want to enjoy it, don't you?
Yeah, I don't ever want people to be, you know, dragging themselves into the office or feeling like, oh, I don't want to do this. So, yeah, I think that's my main thing.
I think for us, I want to see more cutting-edge AI developed by us, and that's only going to happen as we continue to progress and grow and can afford more data centers ultimately. But that would be really exciting for us, I think, would be to be at the forefront of that market.
Yeah, I think the second what you said there about kind of the growth and the culture and the staff enjoying coming to work, I think, you know, we've grown a fair bit and we grew a lot over the pandemic. I'd just like to see that growth continue over the course of the kind of next, you know, however many years. But I think most importantly, scale with the team that we've currently got and other like-minded, hardworking individuals.
Sounds good.
Sounds idealistic, right?
Yeah. We're going to all be keeping a keen eye on what you're up to in the next few years anyway. So Hannah's going to be at the forefront of everything AI. We're going to watch out for that.
Yeah, and you'll be saving the planet with her new research as well.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, amazing conversation. Really enjoyed. I can't believe we've been talking for nearly an hour. Can you believe it?
No.
These podcasts fly. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your experiences.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening. There's absolutely loads of episodes of A Cast of Entrepreneurs, so check out who else has been on the podcast. Give us a listen, like, subscribe, leave us a review, and tune in next time for another exciting edition of A Cast of Entrepreneurs.